OW.
It's 1 o'clock.
Today, the U.S. Department of Labor announced the nation's unemployment rate dropped. Yesterday, the Commerce Department reported economic growth and consumer spending are on the rise. But maybe your pocketbook tells you a different story. How do you cut costs when an economic recession hits your household? It's The Conversation. I'm Heather Dahl, in for Ross Reynolds. Washington State is experiencing slow growth and some of the highest unemployment in the nation. So how can you make more of your precious dollars? Is it about clipping coupons or changing your lifestyle? Cheap Tricks for Living a Simple Life in Tough Economic Times is The Conversation. Share your penny-pinching tricks at 206-543-KUOW, 1-800-289-KUOW. The Conversation begins right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Ann Bozell. President Bush is welcoming North Korea's agreement to join multinational talks about its nuclear ambitions. After months of insisting on one-on-one talks with the U.S., North Korea said it is willing to include South Korea, China, Japan, and Russia in the talks. President Bush says that is encouraging news.
In the past, it was the lone voice of the United States speaking clearly about this. Now we'll have other parties who have got a vested interest in peace on the Korean Peninsula. And so I would say the progress is good progress, and we're upbeat about it.
The president said he hopes the forum will help persuade North Korea to totally dismantle its weapons program. West African leaders have arrived in Liberia for discussions with President Charles Taylor about his going into exile after peacekeepers arrive in Liberia next week. But they were told Taylor had left Monrovia for a port city where his troops are battling rebel forces. A suicide bomber detonated a truck packed with explosives at a Russian military hospital near Chechnya today. Russian media report at least 20 people were killed. NPR's Lauren Sheets reports from Moscow.
Reports say a single person was behind the wheel of the large cargo truck as it raced toward the military hospital in the city of Mozdok. That's the staging area for Russia's armed forces fighting in Chechnya. The blast was so powerful it could be felt at least 10 miles away. The four-story building was completely destroyed. Rescuers were being hampered by flames which engulfed the ruins of the hospital. At least 50 patients, many of them soldiers who had seen action in Chechnya, and 30 medical personnel were believed to be inside the building at the time. Radical Chechen separatist factions have taken responsibility for similar suicide bombings in the past. Lawrence Sheets, NPR News, Moscow.
The 1.4 million member Teamsters Union has endorsed Congressman Dick Gebhardt in the Democratic presidential primary race. NPR's Peter Overby reports.
The Teamsters board voted today, and it was unanimous. The formal announcement is due next week, with a rally for Gebhardt next weekend in Detroit. A union spokesman says Gebhardt is, quote, far and away ahead of the other eight Democratic candidates on issues the union considers most important. Topping that list is Gebhardt's consistent opposition to NAFTA and other free trade agreements. Unions say the agreements are written to benefit big corporations while American jobs are moved overseas. The Teamsters Union is one of the nation's largest and one of the most politically organized. It's been wooed heavily by the Bush administration. The endorsement of Gebhardt comes as his campaign has been struggling. It fell about $1 million short of its fundraising goal for the spring quarter. Peter Overby, NPR News, Washington.
At the closing bell, the Dow was down 80 points to 91.53 in active trade, the Nasdaq down 18 to 17.16, the S&P down 10. This is NPR.
94.9 KUOW, NPR News and Information. I'm Ken Vincent. The first Republican candidate to announce for governor of Washington isn't getting enthusiastic support from the state's top GOP official. Dr. Federico Cruz, director of the Tacoma Pierce County Health Department for the past 11 years, announced his candidacy yesterday. Cruz has never held elective office before. State Republican Chair Chris Vance says flatly that Cruz won't be nominated and should consider running for lieutenant governor. Vance says a stronger candidate will be coming along. But Cruz says he won't be dissuaded. He says the state party's approach is that it almost doesn't matter what the ideology is if the candidate has a lot of money.
I'm coming from the outside, in a sense. I'm not
a hand-picked candidate. I'm coming because I have strong ideas and commitment to making change.
Cruz says that as governor, he would stress health care, education, the environment, and improvement of the criminal justice system. Seattle Opera inaugurates Marion Oliver McCaw Hall tomorrow night. Although audiences had a chance to see a preview performance in McCaw Hall in June, the new production of Parsifal is the venue's first full-scale opera. Seattle Opera General Director Spate Jenkins says it will prove whether McCaw Hall is up to artistic snuff.
We have a chance to have some of the great acoustics in the world here, from what we've been able to tell.
1 hour from now on The Beat, KUOW's Marcy Silman previews her NPR profile of Spate Jenkins. That'll be at 2 on The Beat. The Mariners beat Detroit 4-0. They begin a 3-game homestand tonight against the Chicago White Sox. The temperature now 67 degrees under mostly sunny skies. It's 6 minutes past 1. I'm Ken Vincent. This is 94.9 KUOW.
Support for NPR comes from the Geraldine R. Dodge Foundation, supporting educational, cultural, and environmental initiatives to make our world more livable. On the web at grdodge.org.
Unemployment rate dropped to 6.2% last month. That's because nearly a 500,000 of discouraged Americans have stopped looking for work altogether. So how do you make ends meet if you're suffering from hard times? It's The Conversation on 94.9 KUOW. I'm Heather Dahl, in for Ross Reynolds. Okay, here's the deal about today's show. When I hear these economic figures, whether they're from the Department of Labor or yesterday from the Commerce Department saying that the economy is slightly growing, that consumer spending is up, I have to tell you, my pocketbook does not feel a thing. So I'm always looking for ways to stretch my dollar because, let's face it, I don't depend on the economy to do it for me. And I have a strong suspicion there are many of you out there who like to save money because, believe me, I do. So let's put our heads together today and share cheap tricks, ideas of ways that we can cut costs, ways that we can stretch our dollar, the ways for ways that we can afford more in our daily life. How do you cut costs? Give me a call. I'm at 206-543-KUOW. That's 1-800-289-KUOW. And you can email me. I'm at conversation@kuow.org. And I'm also interested in hearing from those of you who did things that didn't work. Let us know so we don't make the same mistake. I already have one call in from Carmen in Seattle. Carmen, how do you go about cutting costs?
Well, I was raised by my grandmother, who grew up during the Depression, and that affected how she stretched the dollar throughout her life, and that was passed on to me. And so some of the things that I do that has enabled me, for me, it's not having more money to do more things, it's having more time. So I choose to work, have chosen to work in my career less time, and to yet be able to get all the things that I want. So some of the things I do, like I only go to matinee performances at the movies. I never go and spend full amount. My grandmother taught me back in those days, sales only happened twice a year, and instead of like they do now where they're perpetual. But you would buy supplies of things that you knew that you would need for the entire year. For example, things like stocking, things like underwear.
Mm-hmm.
You buy like for half a year if it was a half year sale or, you know, for the entire year. Other things that you would do is in terms of electricity. You put on the lights when the sun is down. You don't have lights on during the day. You open the shades and let the sunlight in. Conversely, in this hot weather, and this is what I did these past few days, is you open the place up at night, let in the maximum amount of coolness, and then in the day, you close the place up.
But are you ever tempted to maybe splurge a little, to turn on the light at night, to go to an evening performance?
Actually, not very much. There are some things that I have gone to evening performances if there is something that I wanted to see that I couldn't get at a matinee. But that has to do with performing, nor it's not a movie. Of course, I turn on the lights sometimes, but I also use a little flashlight instead of going around and turning on the light if there's something I want to get in the part of the house that late at night after I've turned out all the lights. I'll use my little flashlight to go there.
Well, Carmen, I really want to thank you for calling us. Carmen in Seattle says, go to bargain matinees, turn the lights off at night, don't use electricity unless you need it. What are your ideas for saving money? I'm at 206-543-KUOW. That's 1-800-289-KUOW. Don't worry about writing down all these tips that we're giving you today. After the show, we're going to compile a list and we'll email it out. Conversationalists, those of you that are signed up for our daily email update, will automatically send you this list. If you are not a conversationalist, send an email to conversation@kuow.org and ask. We'll send it out this weekend, and we'll send it out for the best price of all, free. Here's a question to think about. How can a family of seven live debt-free on $30,000 a year? Steve and Annette Economidis can tell us how. They're the editors of the monthly newsletter Home Economizer. Steve's the CEO, the chief economizing officer, and Annette's the CFO, the chief frugality officer. Steve and Annette, thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
Heather, it's good to talk to you.
Well, let me ask you, Steve, is Economidis really your last name?
No, it was really Smith, but we changed it. No. It's, that's really our last name. It's a Greek name, and it has something to do with money, and that's what we, yeah, that's it.
So tell me your story. How did you get started saving money?
Well, it was a long time ago, about 21 years ago when we first got married. I was working as a graphic designer earning a whopping $6.50 an hour, and Annette and I wanted to get married, and Annette wanted to stay at home. And we had a baby within the first year of marriage, actually 11 months after we were married, and she wanted to be home, learn to be a mom, learn to take care of the house, and so we decided we live on one income, and so we picked our housing carefully, and we just stretched pennies. Annette is the expert at that, and she stretched them until they begged for mercy.
Well, one of the things, Steve, you talked to me when I called you earlier this week is about saving money on milk. And I had never heard this before, and I've been sharing it with other people. Tell me how you save money with milk.
Well, milk can be frozen, and a lot of people don't realize that. And usually grocery stores will compete, and they know milk is a pretty popular item to be sold, so they'll put that on sale pretty frequently. And when they do, we'll stock up and we'll put it in our freezer. You just need to tap off the top, and it can stay there for weeks.
So you just defrost it, de-thaw it.
Yeah.
And does it taste like milk?
It tastes fine.
You shake it up a little bit. Uh-huh. It's just fine.
Okay. One of the articles I've seen in your newsletter is called Plastic Surgery for Debt, and that's probably a pretty good place to start if you really feel like you're basically don't have any money whatsoever. You owe more money than you're making. Where do you start?
Well, you've got to come up with, first off, you have to have an attitude that says, I don't want to live this way anymore, because your attitude is really going to drive your performance. And what we do when we help people get out of debt is we stop all unnecessary spending. That's kind of like akin to being in an emergency room, and the first thing you do in a first aid situation is stop the bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
So we say, you know, we're just stopping it. We're not going to movies for a little bit. You can hold your breath for a little while. You can stop the bleeding here for just a little while, and we're going to make sense of your financial situation.
But isn't that the most painful part right there, is stopping an old habit?
It is, but you know, what's even more painful is admitting that you blew it and having to file bankruptcy.
Right.
So we figure a little bit of pain in the emergency room now to deal with the situation is far better than going through the humiliation and the discouragement of being a total failure with your finances.
Or what's more painful is living with that situation day in and day out,
mm-hmm.
where you're just drowning. And so if you decide this very day, I'm going to deal with this, It's only positive from here on out.
But Heather, let's talk about what it takes to really get out of debt.
What does it take?
If you can balance your budget, if you can stop spending more than you make and generate an excess of $20 or $30 a month, what we tell people to do is line up their credit card bills or their debts, smallest to largest.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is you pay everybody something. Even if it's below the minimum payment, you pay everybody something.
Why is that? Why not just take care of one bill and get it over with?
That's a good question. What we're dealing with is you're feeling discouraged. You're feeling
overwhelmed. We want to make some emotional headway. So we take that $20 extra a month, and we put it on the smallest bill. And within a couple of months, most people can pay off that one bill, and they've got an emotional success.
Mm-hmm.
They've eliminated one thing off their list. You take what you paid on that bill, the regular payment plus that $20 extra, you apply it to your next bill. And doing that, we've seen couples who have been in horrendous situations be able to pay off huge amounts of debt within 18 months. As a matter of fact, we just helped a couple that paid $14,000 worth of debt off in about 5 months. Now,
yeah.
Granted, they were earning household income about $80,000 or $90,000, but they were under the pile, and they did it.
You're listening to The Conversation on 94.9 KUOW. I'm Heather Dahl in for Ross Reynolds. Today we're talking about how you can cut costs. Let's go to Lila in Linwood. Lila, how do you cut costs?
Oh, many ways. But the one that I wanted to share with you this afternoon is what I call the watch list. When I need something, I see that I'm running out, I'm running low on peanut butter or something, I put it on the watch list.
Okay.
And then I watch the ads for that coming on sale.
And where do you look for ads?
Well, some of them come in my mail, and the three major supermarkets. Or I might find it at Fred Meyer or someplace else.
So do you not buy it until you see it on sale?
Well, I might need it sooner than that, but I try to anticipate that I'm going to need it so that I can catch it on sale instead of running out and having to go buy it on regular price.
Lila, thanks so much for sharing your watch list with us. Annette,
yes.
I understand that you are in charge of buying all the food. And I understand you can do this for about $350 a month for seven people. Is that right?
It sure is.
How?
Well, we administrate lots of different strategies to get there. There isn't just one way to stretch your food pennies, and I've got a whole bunch of them, and actually some of them, Lila just a few minutes ago talked about one of them.
The watch list.
Ahead. So I've got several different ones that I'll just read off a few of them to you. Stocking up when things are on sale, not just buying for this week, buying for next week and next month and the month after that. Using coupons, if you have the time to do that. If you can combine a coupon with a sale item, you end up paying pennies for something. And once again, when that happens, I'll stock up. Price matching. I'm pretty sure you guys have a Super Walmart up there. Down here, Super Walmart does something called price matching. You can take your food ads from all the grocery stores, and if you over time learn what the best prices are, you can walk into Walmart with those food ads for that week. If you see a really good price on something and say, this is what I want to get, and I want to price match it. So that's another way to save some time. Stay out of warehouse stores.
Why?
People think warehouse stores are a great deal. They are not a great deal. At the grocery store, if you overspend, if you are impulsive, you might buy a $1 or a $3 item. At a warehouse store, you're going to buy a $5 or a $10 item.
In single-family households, that's oftentimes too much food or too much product for one to use.
Right. We don't allow picky eaters at our house. Our kids are taught from a very young age to eat lots of food.
Well, that's an accomplishment right there.
Yeah, and it starts out with just, you're going to have three bites of this. And I think I read somewhere that a food has to be put before you about 15 times before you're comfortable with it. People just, they give up way too easily.
I'm speaking with Annette Economidis. She's editor of the newsletter Home Economizer. Annette, how many trips do you make to the grocery store? When you say that you watch and make lists and plan, it sounds like you go a lot.
We go about once a month, actually, because we're so busy with kids' activities. Now, if for some reason we go like middle of the month to go pick up fried chicken at the grocery store for a dinner, and I talk about that in one of our issues as well, then we'll check the store that we're going to and see if there's a couple of killer loss leader items and maybe pick up two or three items along with that fried chicken. But we do not make specific trips to the grocery store for food.
Heather, the grocery stores anticipate that you're going to make 60% of your purchases on impulse. So the
60%.
More store, the more items you're going to pick up. You go in for 10 items, you're going to walk out with 16.
But how do you not make those impulsive purchases I do every time I go to the store. How do I stop myself?
Okay, well, what we encourage people to do is sit down at least once a week and plan a menu. Think through what you'd eat for breakfast. Think through what you'd eat for lunch. Same with dinner. And, you know, if people are going two and three and four times a week, go once or twice a week. Just start cutting down. Take little steps.
Heather, you know what Annette's response was when I first suggested that she plan a menu?
What?
No way, I'm not doing that. My mom didn't do it. My sisters don't do it. Nobody I know does it.
Well, I'm thinking the same thing, and I like to plan out for 3 days, but a whole month for me is a little bit... Little baby steps.
The first time, and she'll tell you that. And we wrote about that in our Menu Mania article. But what's happened over time is she's learned a system, and now it frees her up. So this is all about learning disciplines and learning habits that free up your time.
Right.
We're going to take a short break here because we're talking about saving money and cutting costs to survive rough financial times. You can join our conversation by calling 206-543-5869. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, more ways to stretch your dollar from the editors of the Home Economizer newsletter. Stick around.
Support for KUOW comes from the Ballard Farmers Market, now open for the 2003-2004 season on Ballard Avenue. The Ballard Farmers Market offers fresh organic greens, vegetables, honeys, and crafts every Sunday from 10 to 4 p.m. year-round. More information can be found online at ballardsundaymarket.com.
So let me make sure I have this straight. We're tightening the noose, we're connecting the dots, we're on the hunt, and he's on the ropes? This is Bill Radke. This week's news has been a mélange of metaphors. We'll do our best to explain all the twists and turns of phrase and all the stories behind them on this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me tomorrow morning at 10 on 94.9 KUOW.
I'm cheap. I like to save money. I like to shop at thrift shops. I'll see you there. It's the conversation where we're all about doing more for less. I'm Heather Dahl, in for my fellow penny-pinching colleague, Ross Reynolds. So today we're sharing ideas on how to cut costs and get more from what we have. You can share your ideas by calling us at 206-543-KUOW, 1-800-289-KUOW, and send your email to conversation@kuow.org. We're writing down all the ideas that you hear in the program today and compiling all the email that you send in. To get this list, you can send an email to conversation@kuow.org. We'll send it out to you this weekend. If you're a conversationalist and you receive our daily email update, don't worry, you automatically get the list. I'm speaking right now with Steve and Annette, economidus. I keep wanting to fiddle with your name there because it's just pretty hard to believe that you inherited that name and this is what you focus on. They run the newsletter Home Economizer. You can go to the KUOW website and there on the conversation page, we do have a link to their newsletter. Steve and Annette, let me ask you, how do you balance wanting to indulge and do fun things in life and also trying to stick to the means that you have?
We do indulge at times. We have a budget, a planned spending, and we may not indulge in the way that the ordinary public does, but I think we take pretty fabulous vacations.
What do you do?
Well, 1 year we went to Colorado, and we were up there for a week, and we saw all the touristy things, like the Mint in Denver, and a museum in Littleton, and we just did all a rock cave, a stalactite cave.
Mm-hmm.
We spent the whole week up there and had a ball. Another year we went to Texas, and we got to see the Houston Space Center.
And my brother Greg.
And the San Antonio Riverwalk and the Alamo.
But let me ask you, all the things that you've done, how are you able to do that and stick within your budget?
Well, what we do is we for vacations, for instance, we set aside $200 a month into a separate account for vacation. Our budget is basically one big checkbook, and we subdivide the checkbook into 18 different accounts, and one of those accounts is saving for vacation. One of those accounts is saving for food, for clothes, for recreation. We put aside $55 every 2 weeks for recreational activities. So we have a limit. We know what our limit is, and we look at what's in the budget accounts, and that's how we decide what we're going to do. And if the money isn't there, you know, we take that as a sign that maybe we shouldn't do this, or we should find another way to do it that's less expensive.
But one way of looking at cutting down on costs would be not to take vacation at all, to stay at home.
Well, we have a suggestion about that in one of our issues. We call it the stay-at-home vacation. And many years back, we did do that, and it was a blast. Where dad takes the week off of work, or mm-hmm. mom, or both. And
we don't tell anybody what we're doing.
And, I mean, you could go as crazy as you want to. You could set up a tent in your backyard. You can build a little fireplace out in your backyard and roast hot dogs. But the point is you're spending time together as a family, and you're having fun. You play board games. You watch movies. You go to free museum days. There's oodles of ways to be creative if you decide that that's how you're going to spend your energy.
Well, let's go to Chris in Seattle and see what he does to cut costs. Chris?
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How do you cut costs in your life?
I live in a house of about 7 people, so we've actually discovered going to the food bank really helps out a lot with, you know, because so many people have to eat in their house, so that's, you know, save tons of money.
Now, do you all share food all the time, or do you buy and keep them in your own individual cubbies?
We do a little bit of both. Most of the time, a lot of our food we, you know, share between all of us. But sometimes, you know, we'll go to a store if you have a few extra bucks. So most people in my house work at the same place, kind of a low-wage job. But so, you know, we don't have a lot of money to spend on groceries. So, you know, sometimes, you know, get little nice items here and there.
And when you do go to the grocery store, what do you like to do to save a dime here and there?
Well, I have some grocery stores offer the, you know, they have like QFC or Safeway have their little like club plan, so you can, you know, so you can save money if you get like certain items. And the coupons help out a lot, you know, things like that. And this, you know, kind of like watching what you buy, not buying so many name brands, am I buying like the store brand or something that saves a lot of money?
So you prefer to buy generic?
Yes. Helps out a lot.
Chris, thanks so much for calling. I'm speaking with Annette and Steve Economy Desk. They're editors of the Home Economizer newsletter. Annette, we've talked a lot about food, shopping, going to the grocery store, but clothes. How do you save money on buying clothes for your family?
That's a great one. We do a lot of thrift store shopping. You can find incredible name brands, designer labels at thrift stores. There's a favorite for us. It's called Savers, and they do have them up in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, they have a 99-cent day down by us. It's Mondays, and you can go in, and a certain color tag is 99 cents. Our daughter, 1 year, it was the off-season, but she wanted a heavy coat for winter, and she found a Pendleton wool coat, and it had a 99-cent tag on it, and she spent 99 cents for this coat. And later on found out from my mom that it was probably worth close to $300.
But, Annette, you know, when I was 12, if my mom brought me to the thrift shop, I wouldn't have been too thrilled. How do you bring your kids along to get excited to go?
Well, our kids are raised with it. They're grown up with it. They don't know anything else. And plus, we have a system where they earn and spend their own money.
Do they get allowance?
We don't call it allowance because we have a pretty well-planned point system around our house where they have to earn points on a daily basis.
And by the time they turn 12, they need to start buying their own clothes.
At 12.
For that. And that really makes a difference in how important brand consciousness is when they look in their envelope and they think, you know, I want those $120 sneakers, but I only have $30.
Do your kids get to spend all their money on whatever they want, or do you suggest that they save?
But we'll let them make mistakes. Roy, for instance, is 13 years old, and last year he wanted to buy this Screaming Serpent Kinex roller coaster set. It was $70, advertised on TV. And we knew it wasn't a good thing, but he had the money, so we let him buy it. And I kind of warned him, and about a week after that, he came to me and said, you know, I'm really bored with this. I wish I hadn't bought it.
You're listening to The Conversation on 94.9 KUOW Seattle. I'm speaking with Steve and Annette Economidis. Let me ask you this last question. If you won the lottery, would you still live the same way?
Definitely.
Steve?
We've had years where we have earned huge amounts of money and years when we haven't. And we've never raised the standard of living so that we can basically survive those huge swings in income. And we've come to a point where we love the house we're in, it's big enough for our family, and we don't really see the need to go and spend huge amounts of money. And plus, we want to protect our kids. If we indulge them and give them a lifestyle that they may never attain to, we're handcuffing them. If they get married and have a job where they don't earn as much, yet they've had an expectation of living at a certain level, they're going to have problems, and we don't want to do that to them.
Steve and Annette Economoudis are editors of the Home Economizer newsletter. You can visit their website at homeeconomizer.com, or you can go to the Conversation homepage at kuow.org and link to their website. On the website, you can read and subscribe to their newsletter. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Bye, Heather.
Thank you. Let's go to Boone in the U District. Boone, how do you save money?
Oh, hi, Heather.
Hello.
Hi. Well, I came back to graduate school in the UW a few years ago.
So you're a student?
I'm a graduate student again here, and my previous jobs, I was provided with a car. And then when faced with the prospect of using my own car or buying my own car, the cost was really quite tremendous. And so I decided that I would plan all of my groceries and all even entertainment in terms of going out for the evening or for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that if I use flex car or rent a car for a day or two at a time, if I go backpacking in the Cascades or with friends, it actually works out pretty well, because most of the time I just commute with a bicycle or with metro or even a taxi cab.
So you don't have a car anymore?
I don't have a car anymore. I've lived without a car for over 4 years here. And it works out very well, and I'm not having to actually pay for the maintenance of a car and insurance and all that. In other words, it's about time management. It's about when you plan to have all your activities, because having a car is easy. Oh, I forgot my grocery.
Well, I lived without a car for 10 years, and I made sure I lived in cities where I could ride the public transportation. But I have to tell you, bringing home enough groceries to cook Christmas dinner was kind of a downer. And so, at least here in Seattle, the flex car definitely helps you. But how do you deal with eating? I know graduate students are especially good in penny pinching when it comes to eating.
Oh, yeah. The University of Washington bookstore has a wonderful booklet of coupons. It's called the Husky Survival Kit. And there's also a website where you can actually just print out your own coupons for most of the meals. So a number of restaurants on the app would have 2-for-1 dinners.
2-for-1.
That's right. And apparently quite a few people don't know about this. I have colleagues who were surprised when I put out a coupon when we were having a lunch or a dinner. And it's always available at the beginning of every quarter at the textbook section. Or actually, just as you walk in, you have a rack full of survival kit coupons. It's a fairly substantial booklet.
Boone, I want to thank you for your call. Boone in the U District calling in to let us know 2-for-1 dinner is a great way to save money. For some, trimming corners is a way to save, but for others, they choose to change their entire outlook on life. It's living a type of living called Simple Life. Joining us is Vicki Robbins. She's co-author of the book Your Money, Your Life. Welcome, Vicki.
Yeah, it's good to be with you.
Explain to me what living a simple life is.
I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all for simple living, unlike the consumer lifestyle, where the one-size-fits-all is more is better. People choose to simplify their lives for a whole range of reasons. For some people, it's because they're in debt and they want to get out of debt. For other people, it's many people, it's that they're working too many hours. Most people don't know that we work here in the United States more hours per year than anybody in any other industrialized country, including China and Japan. So some people just want to, if I spend less, if I do less, I can actually shrink my working hours and have a life. So for some people, it's about time. For some people, it's about relationships. It's about, wait a second, I'm married to my job. I say I want a boyfriend, but I don't have any time.
But for some, if you cut back on your hours, you're cutting back on your income.
And here's where the Your Money, Your Life piece comes in. It's really interesting. As probably many people know, Your Money, Your Life came out in 1992. It sold about 750,000 copies in 9 languages. And it presents a very simple 9-step program for tracking and evaluating the flow of money and stuff through your life. And when people, and then comparing the outgo in terms of what we call life energy, which is the time you invest at your job to get the money in your wallet. They compare the life energy outflow to the inflow of, one, happiness, and two, a sense of purpose. And it's like your previous guest was saying, you make some mistakes and realize that, you know, you worked for 6 months raking leaves so that you could have a toy that you don't even enjoy. So after a while, people learn. And on average, people drop about 20 to 25% of their expenses as they apply just simple awareness to what spending works and what doesn't. So if you take a look at that, we could actually have a 32-hour work week here. And people, if they were conscious of the flow of money in their life, they would be certainly have enough. There is a study that was done by NYU and the University of Pennsylvania that says 63% of Americans say that they want to work less, up from only 17% in 1994.
Now, how did you get started simplifying your life?
Well, the thing I did, there's several. Of course, everybody has their own history. For one, I had the opportunity to travel when I was young, and I realized that the less money I spent, the longer I could live on my fixed amount of money. So I developed some frugality tricks there. And then after I graduated from Brown University, I started in the workplace, and after a couple of years, I realized that I was going to be spending my whole life selling my time, my talents, my intelligence to somebody else to do their agenda. And for me, the idea of freedom was really important, you know, to be able to free up as much time as possible to be able to do the things that I felt called to do, not just to laze around and watch TV and eat potato chips.
So in your life, freedom to do what you want to do and your time has far more value than monetary and having a dollar bill in your hand.
Yes. I mean, after the point of sufficiency, I recognize that I and nobody else in this society really can live without money. So we all need a sufficient amount of money, but we don't need as much as we think because we become habituated to consumption to solve our problems. And we're all exposed to about 30,000 ads a day, all of which have one story. You're not adequate in some way, but if you had our product, you would be adequate.
I'm speaking with Vicki Robbins, co-author of Your Money, Your Life. You're listening to The Conversation on 94.9 KUOW. I'm Heather Dahl in for Ross Reynolds. Maybe you've simplified your life. Give me a call. I'm at 206-543-KUOW. Let's go to Karen in Seattle. Karen, how have you simplified or cut back in your life?
Well, I've been forced to simplify and cut back in many ways. I have chronic fatigue syndrome and living on disability. But one of the fun things I do with friends is a couple of times a year, sort of whenever somebody feels like organizing it, we get together and have a clothes swap. Everyone brings their clothes that don't fit or they don't like anymore. And
so a big party.
Yeah, it's a big party, and we dump them in the middle of the room, and you just we sort of have to hold everyone off until we say, okay, go, and then everyone starts digging through the pile and trying things on, and I'm amazed always at I always come home with a bag full of clothes.
So what are some of the things that you've gotten from this?
I have gotten a cocktail dress, a wonderful linen hot pink dress. I've gotten a number of, different kinds of pants, shirts, tops, just about everything. People bring shoes. A friend, we had one just recently, a friend walked away with a pair of hiking boots new to her, and I think they may have been new. It looks like somebody bought them, and they just ended up not fitting or something, and so they brought them, and she took those.
Karen, it sounds like a lot of fun. Thanks for calling and telling us about it. Thanks so much. Vicki Robbins, let me ask you, we've heard a lot of ideas today about ways to cut back on cost of living. Does simplifying your life mean that you have to already have a strong financial foundation before you begin?
Yes and no. There are many people who followed the program In Your Money or Your Life who started out like $100,000 in debt. And they used, what we're calling today simplifying their lives or frugality or mindfulness with money. They used that in order to pay off their debt and develop savings. So they were pretty strapped. And there are other people who have started doing this program and realized that in just their accumulated possessions, they had like $250,000 of assets. And if they wanted to, right now they could liquidate and have a pretty decent life not by investing their money.
So if I were to go...
I want to say one other thing about this is that I don't want to have the mistake that we're recommending that people who are living at or below the poverty line should also simplify their lives. The point that all of us, there's a invitational network of leaders of the simplicity movement, the authors, activists, academics. And what we're saying is that it's completely reasonable for middle-class people to simplify their lives. As a matter of fact, simplicity is for everyone. Even wealthy people are overstretched, overtaxed. You know, CEOs are putting in way too much time in the job, and they're getting ill from it. So these are people who can afford to simplify and also take a look around and say, what changes in cultural norms, in voluntary actions, and in also legislative agendas could we put into America that would make simple living simpler for everyone?
We're talking about living a simple life during tough economic times. We're going to take a short break. I'm Heather Dahl in for Ross Reynolds. You're listening to The Conversation on 94.9 KUOW.
Support for KUOW comes from Clipper Vacations, offering overnight packages from Seattle to Vancouver, B.C. aboard the Amtrak Cascades and 2 days and one night in Vancouver at a choice of hotels. Clipper Vacations at 206-448-5000 or online at clippervacations.com.
I'm Marcy Silman. Marion Oliver McCaw Hall opens Saturday with a new production of Wagner's last opera, Parsifal. It's a feat for both the opera company and particularly for its general director, Spate Jenkins. We'll profile the impresario, plus Elvis Mitchell talks to the director of the new movie, Seabiscuit. It's all coming up at 2 o'clock on The Beat on 94.9 KUOW, Seattle.
Join KUOW and Wooden O Theater in their free summer Shakespeare in the Park series as they present Henry V and Much Ado About Nothing. For information, visit our community page at KUOW.org.
You can say I'm tripping, but I'm stingy, and I can't hide it. I just want to please forgive. I'm just stingy, but how can you...
Are you stingy? Maybe you're just like me, just trying to do more with less. It's The Conversation on 94.9 KUOW Seattle, where most of our financial support comes from our listeners. Thank you. I'm Heather Dahl in for Ross Reynolds. Today we're talking about how to do more with a little less. We're getting your ideas, ways to save money and simplify your life. Let me know what you've done. I'm at 206-543-KUOW. That's 1-800-289-KUOW. Or you can send your idea on an email, conversation@kuow.org. In this program, we're keeping track of all the ideas that are being presented, and we'll email them to you this weekend. Just send us an email saying, sign me up, send me the list, and you'll get it. For those of you who are already conversationalists, you receive the daily email update. You automatically get a copy of the list. I've been speaking with Vicki Robbins. She's the author of Your Money, Your Life. You can link to her website by going to the Conversation website at kuow.org and see, read some of her writings, read a bit more about her book. Vicki Robbins, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Let me ask you, things are tough in Washington State. High unemployment, slow economic growth, and things are tough nationwide. Are you seeing more people getting involved in a simple lifestyle?
I think that there are more people getting involved involuntarily. And when you get involved in this involuntarily, it feels like deprivation. Well, certainly the movement is growing. I mean, there's many, many people who are turning to simpler living. But I do believe that one of the tragedies in our society is this overstress, overwork, increasing unemployment or underemployment or temporary worker employment. people are racing like little hamsters in a cage just to keep up, keep the jobs from going south to Mexico or, you know, west to China. So there's a tremendous pressure on workers. And, you know, and many of them don't even have the time or the presence of mind to say, wait a second, there's got to be a better way, because we're all going so fast we have no time.
So how do you step back from this roller coaster and say, wait, I've got to do something here?
Well, you know, one thing is that this organization I told you about, the Simplicity Forum, is co-hosting with another organization, Seeds of Simplicity, a forum in Seattle on August 24th called Simplicity Integrating Sustainability, Social Justice, and Spirit. And this will be a public education day. We're taking advantage of having many of the well-known authors and filmmakers and academics here in Seattle to have a citywide discussion on how can we live more simply, how can we take back our time. That's one of our initiatives, is Take Back Your Time Day. And October 24th is the first Take Back Your Time Day. And the reason it's that date is that if you lived in Western Europe, you'd be done for the year.
You would. You would be on vacation.
Yeah, so we're encouraging people to take some time, take a break from work. And there's many teach-ins happening around the country. So we're very excited about this August 24th, big public education day, and then following close on its heels, Time Day, and really trying to have a national conversation about our priorities in terms of time and in terms of consumption. The assumption in this society is that the only way that we are going to be economically prosperous is if people consume more. But I'll tell you, people are strapped. They're in debt, and they're taking a look at the stock market tanking, and that was their retirement. So we do not have happy campers out there in America.
I want to let people know that they can link to the websites that you talk about on the conversation page, and you can see the Simple Life Forum. You can read more about Vicki Robbins' books. But I want to go to Alan in Seattle. We're talking about ways to cut back, ways to make your dollar stretch further. It's the conversation on 94.9 KUOW. Alan, what are the secrets that you have to share with us today?
Hi, Heather.
Hello.
I resent being lectured to about my way of life, for one thing. I'm interested in saving money.
Okay.
The only philosophy involved is, if it costs more than a buck, do I really need this? Ask that question. And for food, I contradict and take exception to a lady who called in earlier and boasted about buying so much food for so many people for $350 a month. And her rule was to buy in quantity, buy bulk. And then she contradicted herself, totally turned it upside down by saying, avoid the warehouse stores.
So do you go to warehouse stores?
Of course. You save a lot of money. You get things fresh. You buy in bulk, which is what she said in the first place. I get brown sugar, peanuts, tomatoes, lettuce, ketchup, mayonnaise, everything I need to make a giant chef salad.
Now, how many people are you buying for?
One.
Just you?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. And almost nothing goes to waste because I have a refrigerator.
Well, how do you do it? Because I'm buying for one, and I feel like if I go to Costco, I have ketchup in every cupboard in my kitchen. How do you do it?
Well, for ketchup, I check to see what my mother needs and try to reconcile with that. But, I mean, ketchup lasts for years, you know, so who cares if you buy a two-bottle package and it lasts you a whole year. You know, it doesn't wear out. It doesn't expire. You know, I mean, maybe if you kept it for a century.
So the main thing when you're buying in bulk is that you're buying for the long term.
Well, I do it to save money and to get fresh food. And the coupon thing is totally absurd.
So you don't clip coupons, I take it?
No, when you clip coupons and traipse from one store to another, especially if you drive, you are wasting way more money. I mean, those things are nickel-dime. We're talking about big savings. I do not have any connection with Costco, but by God, I get a really good deal on my food there. And the only things I don't buy because they'll spoil before I can use them would be milk. And
well, we learned you can freeze your milk now. You can freeze your milk, put it in the freezer, and you have milk for... Problem solved, Alan. So I will see you buying milk at Costco. Thanks so much for calling, Alan. Vicki Robbins is with us. She's author of Your Money, Your Life. I want to ask you, what would a simple life look like? If I said, I want to slow down, I want to work fewer hours, I want to make, which means I'll make less money, how do I go about saying, okay, what do I need to get out of my life?
Well, you know, that's really a process for everybody to determine for themselves. And very often when I talk to people about your money or your life, they say, well, wait a second, I like my latte. Or, wait a second, I like my, you know.
So I like my iced grande chai.
I like my, you know, so I say, well, look, keep that. If that's making you happy, if that's good value for you, keep the things you want. Just get rid of the things you don't want. Now, how do you know what you don't want? Well, for one thing, on, you know, small items around the house, just notice when you buy repeatedly the same thing. You know, there's, you know, people have all sorts of different, you know, purchase fetishes. Some people have 50 pairs of shoes. One woman called me and told me after doing your money or your life, she realized that every Friday, to reward herself for a tough week, she went out and bought a blouse. Now, they were always white because that's what she liked. And then she suddenly realized when she looked in her closet that she had 50 white blouses. Now, this sounds insane, but I hear this story all the time. So that's on the smaller things. But take a look at some of the assumptions. There was somebody talking about not having a car. Many people make the assumption that you should, you know, you should trade in your car, you know, like every 3 or 5 years. There's some kind of basic knowledge that, you know, an older car is, whether it's not status or it's going to start to break down. And so many people are buying new cars when they have perfectly functional cars that could go probably 200,000 miles. And when you think about how much money, how much of your life energy, how much of your time you invest in the workplace, very often people realize through doing your money or life that they're spending 3 years in the workplace to support their SUV that they use just to get back and forth to the workplace.
Well, Vicki Robbins, what we're talking about in a sense is a very personal and individual decision. What if you're married? What if you have children? What if you have teenagers? How can you bring along your family in this decision-making process?
Well, for one thing, you know, you may not be able to from the beginning. I often say that you know, God or goddess or whoever you might believe in has just a wonderful sense of humor, because tightwads and spendthrifts are always paired. And, you know, then, you know, they get married and they're always in this struggle about, you know, laxness and kind of free-flowing money versus, you know, frugality. So one thing you can do is you can say, well, I'm going to be frugal, and maybe we can, you know, my husband and I, we can pay ourselves allowances. There's group money that we use for basics, and then we each get an allowance, and we can spend it however we want to. I can save it, and he can spend it. So what?
You're listening to The Conversation on 94.9 KUOW Seattle. I'm Heather Dahl in for Ross Reynolds. We're talking about ways we can cut back during tough times and with our pocketbook. I got this email from Cynthia in Bonnie Lake. She writes, I recently eliminated the extras such as cable, voicemail, caller ID. I try to eliminate fast food purchases. I travel with an ice chest filled with water and homemade snacks. I don't buy soda pop anymore. We drink water, or I prepared Kool-Aid with half the sugar for the children. I cook more from scratch. I try not to buy expensive processed foods. I try to do once a week cooking with meals made from scratch. And I shop at garage sales for household items that are necessary. Let me ask you, Vicki Robbins, as people are entering the workforce, we're talking about those in their 20s and early 30s, are they deciding to start at a young age to start simplifying and living within their means?
Actually, the answer is yes. And I first want to say that if you want to know about the simple life, she just told you. You know, that's just what I do. And every time I buy in a thrift store or I drink water instead of soda pop, every time I make one of those choices, I have a sense of freedom, because I realize that I'm really not committing myself to a job I don't want, you know, to pay for things that I don't really need to be buying.
Well, you know what I do when I go to the store? I look at the item and then calculate how many hours it would take of me working, and then decide, is it really worth it?
Bingo. That's exactly, step two in your money or life is exactly that. you figure out your real hourly wage. In other words, not just, you know, the $20 an hour you're supposedly earning, but basically when you figure in all the extra time you work, just getting commuting and all the extra expenses of work, you know, all your kind of special outfits and this and that, and you find out that maybe that $20 an hour is $10 or even $5 an hour. So when you do that computation in the supermarket, it might even be worse than you know.
Or those boots on the shelf just aren't worth, let's say, 40 hours of work.
Is exactly true. You know, supermarkets are designed so that if you go around the outside edges, you're getting your basics, your vegetables, your meats, your produce, et cetera. It's when you go up and down the aisles, especially packaged food, and especially packaged food that's at eye level.
Right.
That's where you start to spend a lot of money.
Well, let's go to Lorraine in Edmonds. She has an idea for us. Lorraine?
Hi, yes.
Hi, your idea.
Yes, thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome.
First of all, I would like to say thank you to Vicki. I read Your Money or Your Life many, many years ago when my husband and I were over $20,000 in debt. And we started with a change in perspective on our own lives and how we were living and what we needed. And I got laid off from a position 2.5 years ago, like many of us, and have been just doing catch-as-catch-can in my employment ever since. But the reason that the unemployment didn't hit us as hard as some is because we have started down a lifestyle of simplicity. I do shop thrift store for my clothes. And we get together once a week, either on a Saturday or Sunday. We are both very busy, and we will prepare meals for the week, so that we're not tempted to buy the $4 salads at the grocery store and the prepared meals. And I also just have to laugh and tell you, I have a friend recently divorced who is just discovering the simplicity of life. Until she was divorced, she was shopping at Nordstrom and all of the very high-end stores, which is great if you have the money. She went down to a $50 an hour job. And now when she begins to shop, she actually comes to my closet to get all of the clothes because she thinks they're so amazingly cute, and all of these clothes I have bought at thrift stores. So she has started to realize the value in doing things this way. So I do the same thing, garage sales, thrift stores, pre-prepare my meals. I do freeze my milk. I came from depression parents, so I learned a lot of this very early in life.
Lorraine, thanks so much for calling us and telling us your story. Vicki Robbins, I have a question here. If living within your means and living a simple life is so beneficial, why don't you think more Americans do it? We're a very consumer, capitalism-driven country. So many people are in debt. Why don't people start paring back?
Well, I have some very simple answers for that. Number one, as I said earlier, it's on average, we are exposed to 3,000 advertising messages a day telling us to buy. We are not exposed to very many messages a day telling us to conserve our resources and don't spend our money and save it. And that actually serves the growth of the economy. An economy should be for people, but it's actually for business. So that's one thing, is that we get no encouragement. As a matter of fact, if we save money, we still have to pay, you know, large taxes on money that we're saving. So there's nothing in the system that's encouraging thrift.
Vicki Robbins, we're gonna have to leave it there. I'm sorry, we're just about out of time. But Vicki Robbins' book is Your Money, Your Life. You can link to her webpage from the conversation page at kuow.org. If you're interested in receiving a list of the ideas you heard in today's program, send an email to conversation@kuow.org. We'll try to get that off this week. And we get production help from Andrew Burgess. Ken Vincent engineered the program. John Moe is the producer. I'm Heather Dahl. Have a wonderful weekend.
It's just about 2 o'clock at 94.9 KUOW, NPR News and Information. Up next, The Beat, Marcy Silman's profile of Seattle Opera General Director Spate Jenkins. First, Sarah Johnson, how's the traffic?
Well, I-90 looks fantastic. It was closed earlier and everybody got scared away, and now it's absolutely wide open, a perfect bridge in both directions. 520 still struggling eastbound I-5 to the Arboretum and westbound from 92nd to the bridge. Northbound 5 is slow in the main line from Mercer to the 520 interchange, and southbound from Northgate across the Ship Canal Bridge is bumper to bumper as well. You'll find delays on southbound 405 through the Wilburton Tunnel in Bellevue, then from the Renton Eskers over to South Center. The Valley Freeway backup still really nasty northbound from 180th up to Grady Way in Renton, and your trip northbound to Everett is already bumper to bumper as well, 128th up to at least 41st. This look at traffic is brought to you by the Seattle Times. I'm Sarah Johnson for KUOW.
Thank you, Sarah. Through the weekend, morning overcast, then mostly sunny and highs around 80. Tuesday through Thursday, mostly cloudy nights, partly sunny days, and highs around 70, anywhere from 65 to 75 degrees at the beginning of next week. Right now, 68 degrees. The time is 2 o'clock.